This week on RSVMB Update, we have a double launch of updates, including a Ninja Strike for Lunar Spells and the Karapak Track. We have use cases for each spell and a discussion on the Karapak Track's grind and the Yak Track attack. And then we share our thoughts on RuneScape coming to Steam. This is RSVMB Update, episode 796, recorded Thursday, September 24th, 2020. Full steam ahead. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, it's just Tanis and myself here. This week, we had a fun week this week, didn't we, Tanis?
Man, we had an awesome week this week.
We really did. And, you know, it's not just because there's another two content updates this week. The other day we had a chance to sit down with Mod Warden, RuneScape 3's executive producer, and you know that episode will be flowing out to you guys in next week's show spot. You know, we initially thought, oh, let's just go for an hour, maybe a little bit less than an hour, and put that in this week's episode, but we actually went for a full episode on that. So you guys can definitely look forward to hearing a bit about that, and we might just have a little bit of a teaser here for you guys as we wrap up the RS segment on that. So stay tuned for that, and I'm fairly certain that will just pique everyone's interest in what's on the way for next week. But if you're joining us for the first time, I am Shane12088, and he is Tanis79. And of course, you can find full show notes for the episode if you want to follow along at update.rsbnb.com. And you know, this week we have two updates to talk about. We of course have the Karapak track, the new Yak track, and the Ninja Strike 11 for the Lunar Spellbook. And we're going to start off with the Lunar Spellbook changes. And you know, I think that looking at this, we have seen time and time again that the Lunar Spellbook is something that I think many people default to. I started defaulting to it a while back. What is your default spellbook?
Oh, standard.
Standard. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Any particular reason?
Air spell is free. I forget which staff it is. Yeah, I just don't do much, man. I don't do much magic. Now, right. I'll switch it to ancient if I'm, like, in combat, you know.
But, sure.
Otherwise, yeah, I don't know.
All right, fair enough.
And I don't like to, I mean, Lunar, I have to have a reason.
Like, right.
You know, be on them for a reason.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always on Lunar now that I have unlocked the Trollheim farm teleport spell, because that's a quick and easy way to get to the farming place up at Trollheim. Previously, I'd just teleport to Trollheim and run there, but you know, it takes a little while longer.
If I had that, that would be my default, but I don't have it.
Oh yet. Yeah. I spent like 6 to 8 months or so scoping out the Livid Plant at the Traveling Merchant and at the farming hub. Or the farming guild, rather, because, you know, there are times where the farming reputation will give you a Livid Plant. So combining all those, I managed to just bypass everything in the Livid Farm, because quite honestly, I think the Livid Farm is one of the most tedious pieces of content out there. And yes, blasphemy to farming, so I do not like it. But it was made clear last week that they're going to be attempting to keep everybody well and far away from Pauline Polaris, and you wouldn't have any new spell unlocks there for this week. So let's begin with Trap Telekinesis, then, one of the new spells that came out this week. And the whole idea behind this one is that if you have a trap that has caught something, it will allow you to reset your trap by just clicking on it. And you know, this is a really, really useful thing, especially in this day and age. You ever go Grenroll hunting?
No, I never did Grenroll very much, because I never did Big Gem and okay. stuff for the points and all that.
All right. Well, and, you know, this is a bit of a sidetrack to it, but this is going to make this money-making method even more prevalent now, is that, you know, there are Grenwalls on Anachronia at a couple of the dinosaur hunter spots. One of them is the Pavosaurus Rex. And if you have completed the Tyrannan task set, at least medium on that, you no longer need baits to catch Paya or Grenwall, believe it or not. So what you would have needed before was, of course, the Paya meat in order to catch the Grenwalls. But without that bait, you can, you know, literally catch these Grenwalls for cheap. And the idea behind this is because they give Grenwall spikes and, of course, some little herbs here and there. But I don't know if this is because of Double XP Weekend and the regularity that we have associated with it, or if it's a Yak Track thing. But, you know, I spent like 5 minutes, catching Grenwalls on Anachronia Tennis, and I made like 450k GP just from the spikes.
Yeah, I didn't know they were on Anachronia. That might change my calculation here. Dude, there's been a lot of little things like that. I'm working through a potion task on the Yak Track, and herbs are high, but super potions are through the roof.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did they announce it?
I think it's probably just Yak Track and the fact we know we're, you know, less than 2 months away from the next Double XP.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah. So, and, you know, the reason I say that and why we're talking about Grenwall spikes is those are the secondary for the extreme ranged potion. So it's definitely something that everybody wants. And the way this spell works is that whenever a trap falls down, you just click it and it's one cast per trap. And, you know, you only need two extra inventory slots because you just bring the Law and Astral Runes, and you can use an air staff if you want to, and swap to that from your enhanced Yak Twee stick if that's what you're using with your hunter setup. So this one I think is going to find some use in my day-to-day runescaping as we progress forward in the year.
So you were able to test this one out?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Does it reset your trap?
If the trap falls down because nothing has landed in it because of time, like if the trap times out, it does not do that. You have to go reset it yourself with that. But if an animal tries to walk up to your trap, but your trap is not successful in catching it, then you can use trap telekinesis to reset it.
Oh, yeah, man. All right. This was one I was really curious about, but didn't get a chance to try.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And, very cool. And, you know, I also with this tested whether or not the hunter cape perks works with this, and it does not. So if you activate your hunter cape perk before clicking this, you get no extra benefit. So, and you know, this is another question, of course, about whether or not you want a more laid back method of playing the game, or if you want that full lean forward method. Because if you want to go full lean forward, you're still going to be faster to go and pick up the trap itself, press a button on your action bar to access your Hunter Cape perk, and then press another button on your action bar to lay the trap, because that effectively makes it a one-tick trap placement. So it's all about whether you want active or laid-back gameplay.
Okay, well, we like that mechanic.
Yeah.
Or those mechanics.
Yeah. And, you know, I should actually be clear that I misspoke. I don't think it actually resets the traps that have fallen down based on that. So it only gathers something if it has been successful. I just had a look at the video footage that I gathered for this, and it looks as though it's only ones that you were successful with. Let's move on to the next one then, because the next one's also interesting. Fire Urns. And actually, before we do that, I'll just say that the requirements for the trap telekinesis one is 90 7 magic, 5 air runes, 1 law rune, and 2 astral runes. So you'll want to do something with an air staff on that. But as for fire urns, this one effectively just makes it so that if you have unfinished urns in your inventory, it just puts them into a state where they're ready to have their runes added to them. It's 82 magic, 5 water runes, 5 earth runes, and 10 fire runes. So with that, you either decide if you want to go with the steam staff or the mud staff and then substitute in the alternate runes there. So you're going to have to make some choices about what's gonna work best for your pocketbook in that case. Which way would you lean on that?
Probably the mud staff.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, it depends, because I've noticed, like, the runes are up too. So we had a double way. I mean, it was a great week, but yeah. Market took a double whammy on it, or my pocketbook did.
And this is an interesting one, because for each urn in your inventory, you're going to need to cast that rune combination one time each. So this is actually a pretty expensive one to cast, because you're gonna use those astral runes, fire runes, water runes, and earth runes each time you fire off one of your urns. So if you have 26 urns in your inventory, you're going to have to cast the spell 26 times. And that's something that wasn't immediately clear when these were announced.
Right. I mean, the only saving grace to that is, I mean, I, of course you have to run your numbers, but urns sell pretty well. They're always going to be used. They're always going to be a component of high-level skilling. So, I mean, as long as the rune prices don't go too high, this is a moneymaker.
Yeah, and I mean, I think more people are going to be looking at urns if they for some reason decided to invest in Brooch of the Gods.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does that, doesn't it?
Yep. All little kinds of focus on that. Let's talk about Telekinetic Grind next. This one is level 85 magic and only requires 2 astral runes and 1 law rune to cast.
Yeah, this was the one people were making bank on.
Yeah, because
the first couple days this week.
Because you click it once and it casts your entire inventory for 2 law runes or 2 astral runes and 1 law rune. That's nests, mud runes. It does up to 60 mud runes at a time. And
the sleeper this week, goat horn.
Goat horn. Bars.
Goat horn and chocolate bars.
What are goat horns even used for?
I forget the potion, but I forget, man. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. Are you thinking energy potions for chocolate bars or?
Yeah. But when you're talking those mid
who
level.
Okay. Well, that doesn't make sense level to me. I don't get why you would need that.
Because it's a big training. It's a big training, like.
For what potion, though?
Plateau. I think the chocolate bars are super energy, aren't they?
Yeah, super energy.
So,
but that's like a level 52 potion.
Right, but that's still one of the best, like, XP per GP.
Right, and it also goes into one of the power bursts that I'm forgetting, too. So there's that. And I think it might also go into one of the adrenaline potions, too. I'll have to double check on that, but ground or goat horn dust is used for combat potions or smoke devil pouches.
Yeah,
these are level 36 and 61 summoning, respectively. Yet they took a huge jump on the GE this recently. Why?
Yeah. I don't know. I just know what they were selling. I figured it was because there's different bands of GP for XP, and in that band, I just assumed that those were the best potions to make for training in that.
Right.
You know.
But I still don't understand why that's being pushed up with a grinding.
Well, it may not have anything to do with training at all.
Okay.
It might be just because it's going into other more important things.
Right.
I mean, anything that's going into an adrenaline potion, yeah, that's.
Yeah, and that's the. That's the chocolate.
Okay.
Combat potions. What are they used for? I honestly am not seeing anything here that combat potions are used for.
It's something, man. Numbers don't lie.
I know. And if anybody out there can tell me what that is, I'd be very appreciative on that. So, all right. Let's look at the chocolate dust then. Because I know that that definitely goes into the super energy potions, which I think goes into the adrenaline potion on that. So chocolate dust is for energy potions. And then energy potions. This is, once again, a level 26 herbalore item, Tanis.
Huh.
Which goes into the power burst of acceleration.
Ah, there you go. It's the power burst, then.
Which also requires stamina potions. And to make a stamina potion, you need super energy potions, which themselves are the potion that I believe is Evanto and Mortmire Fungi. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Okay. So we're targeting power burst of acceleration on this one. And as for what those combat potions are, that's news to me on that. So, all right.
You know, and the one that I thought would jump up didn't, like, because I thought the dragon scales would go, but there wasn't much.
Yeah, maybe when you look at it from that perspective, it's because people are already stacked with their overloads who need them.
Yeah, it could, yeah.
Yeah,
it could be. I mean, a lot of them being made every four times a year.
Right, and you know, you're going to use those, and you're really not going to, unless you're, you know, making the base potions, you're not going to do much with that. So, yeah, that could be the case. And then we have Sif Soil, which is 91 magic. Oh, and by the way, for the telekinetic grind, you only need to cast it once to do an entire stack of it, which is different than the Fire Urn spell and Sif Soil, which at 91 you can Sif Soil, which is 10 water runes and 5 earth runes and 1 astral rune. So pretty simple for that. Just use a mud staff. And with this one, you also need to have that rune cost for each soil that you sift. And, you know, the interesting part about this one is that where the auto screener, the invention item for archaeology, will just give a material that's more related to that dig site, using the sift soil spell will also give you a chance at getting artifacts as if you were using the soil sifter at the archaeology campus.
Yeah.
So there's extra benefits on that too.
Yeah.
You don't sound convinced here.
I'm conflicted about this one, man.
All right.
So I really look, the convenience of it is great, and it's a way for people to be able to do archaeology longer that don't have access to the soil sifter. That's probably going to be especially important for Iron Man because they do all kinds of quests anyway for unlocks. So, you know, because you're trying to think of who wouldn't have the sifter but would have lunars? Well, probably Iron Man would be.
Right. And plus, there's a reason to not use the soil screener invention device, because that soil screener itself doesn't actually porter your items. And this is actually a question I have that I'm going to test right now, is that will this spell porter your items for you? And if it does, this is a huge reason to use this over the auto screener. So I'm just testing that now. But what are your other concerns with this?
Well, like I said, I love the convenience, but I almost feel like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but does it take away from archaeology? You know what I mean? Like, archaeology is so new, and offering the same benefit as the water sifting spot at the guild, almost I feel like that renders that just not important.
Well, it's a huge cost of one astral rune each time you want to use it. Like, that's 437 GP market right now as we speak.
Well, okay. I mean, I guess there's that. I don't know. I'm trying to be a little more aware of when things start to creep in like that. And I don't know. Archaeology is awfully new to need convenience, I guess.
Yeah.
Right now. I don't know. But, I mean, my main concern was, is it taken away from anything core loop-wise? And I didn't really think so quite so much. But if sifting soil is something that you consider part of the core loop, then this kind of takes away from that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it comes down to balance and cost with this. And, you know, if it's not going to be too much, then that's fine in terms of that, in terms of, you know, just influencing how much players are going to step away from this and, you know, use this traditional method. Because, you know, there's the fertile soil spell, for example. And everybody basically used that when they were looking at doing farming back in the day, and then Ultra Compost came out, and fertile soil doesn't support that. So people then, of course, recalculated and said, are we going to move back to using the typical bucket method of fertilizing our seeds, or are we just going to stick with fertile soil because of the convenience on that? And I think if people had Ultra Compost, they definitely use it. And, you know, I've met some people who just do farming casually, let's just say, and I don't put myself in that camp by any means, which, I mean, anybody who listens to this show knows how much fan I am of that skill. I think if you're doing herb runs to make money, you are always going to use Ultra Compost. And you're either going to make it, and you do have to make it yourself on that. So I think that given everything that we've just said here, we need to just, like you said, we need to be aware of what that means for archaeology and, you know, not go too far. But at the same time, convenience like that is okay because it's all about cost, right? It's all about cost, benefit, and determining if you want to spend that money. And if you think that that's okay to spend that money, then that's fine. And I don't think people are, I don't think we're going to see masses of people stopping sifting soil because of this at the regular spot, or people using the invention tool, for example. I just don't think we're going to see that.
Well, not for right now. I mean, I've seen a lot of this one was the other like huge moneymaker, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, there were some reports of, I mean, up to like 10 mil an hour from this. And I, of course, that's high level. You have to have access to the high level materials for that to be, you know, the number. But like I said, for me, it all depends. Like, I was on the fence on if sifting soil is part of the core loop of archaeology, and
it is,
right? And so that that just makes it a little bit harder for me. But yeah, I mean, this shows though what the ninjas are, why they're so important. Like, I really, really like these kind of deep quality of life improvements, these convenience improvements. It's kind of things that you don't really see in other games. Like, when you get big patches and stuff, or when you get big expansions, it's wonderful for content, but you don't really necessarily always see these quality of lives like we do here with the ninjas.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, two things. First, when it comes to Ultra Compost, you can purchase it, and that's the very discussion I was talking about, because unless you make it yourself, you're looking at around 25K per patch to Ultra Compost. And if you don't want to go through the rigors of making it yourself and you just want to buy it, at that point you're probably better off just using fertile soil. And that's the conversation many people have, and I just wanted to clarify that. And that's, of course, because you can buy the compost but not buy the dragon manure. But if you're aiming to fully AFK Archaeology, Tanis, this spell is your thing.
Because, Yeah. Well,
it porters your materials, whereas the auto screener does not.
Well, I'm pretty sure that it... I mean, are you sure about that? Because yep. My porter goes down, and it doesn't send my artifacts back, it sends the materials back.
From the auto screener?
Yeah. If it didn't do that, I'd never have to leave, man. But I run out of porters.
That's interesting, because I could have sworn I tested the auto screener with porters and it didn't porter things.
It doesn't porter your artifacts.
No, of course not.
Right, but it does do the materials. Or else why would your porters go down?
Because they go down from actually getting the regular materials you're excavating.
Yeah.
So you're saying when you use your auto screener, you don't get any materials in your inventory?
Right. No.
Interesting. I wonder
not
if
until
that,
I run out of porters.
Okay, I wonder if that behavior's changed at all then. Because I could have sworn
it
didn't.
It took me a while to get my auto sifter, so I'm not sure how it was at the beginning.
All right. Well, let's leave that as a question for the listeners to sort through then, because, you know, we're at this point wandering through the weeds.
We are in the weeds.
Yeah, next up was the Lunar Teletabs. You, of course, have to have the spells unlocked to make them. You have to have the spells unlocked to use them. But you can, of course, just buy them on the GE if you don't want to use the runes, or you don't have the runes. But you still need to unlock it as normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Remote Farm has also been completely overhauled to be more readable and user-friendly. And
what do you think of this one?
Yeah, and you know, this also extends to the farming interface at the Farming Guild as well. I think it's pretty good. It's a really nice UI.
Yeah, I thought this looked pretty clean. I was like, oh, much better than the old Remote Farming.
Yeah. And you'll note that the way it's built, it's built specifically to fit on a mobile screen. I don't know if you caught that.
No, I didn't, but yeah. That makes complete sense.
Patches are now separated by category, and some of them will indicate the compass direction they face in. And they also include with this now the Twilight Berry patches as well as the Money Tree patch.
Oh, that's cool.
And the different patch states are now color-coded. And you're also able to cast the Fertile Soil from this spell.
Nice. Okay.
And, of course, you know, there's always the question, like I said, Ultra Compost or Super Compost. But if you're just going for Super, this is, you know, more than adequate. Because, you know, I think we all, of course, remember times when we were out farming and we forgot to fertilize. So, And they also say it opens up faster than it did before as well. Make leather will now tan all the hides of the same type in your backpack at once without having to cast the spell multiple times, and it no longer uses the make X system.
See, this, I think this would have been a good one, but you actually have, don't you, there's this functionality on the portable crafters, isn't it? And then you could, you would get an extra, you might get an extra one here and there.
You're right.
So, yeah. Some might be dead in the water, unless you're just doing it for yourself.
Or maybe you just need a handful of them, right?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. Tune Bainite Ore. You can now cast a spell on Bainite Rocks to mine specific monster ore directly from the rock. And to do this, you'll need an item of that same type of Bane Ore you're after, either in your backpack or mounted on the wall of your POH. And this is something I couldn't figure out. What exactly do you mount on the wall of your POH to be able to influence this weapon?
Head.
Oh. Okay. That makes sense then. I think the last time I used Bane was for some quest that needed you to kill a specific monster very fast. But aside from that, I've never actually used it. Have you?
You know, not anymore. There was like, for a minute when I was in the right, I was just like the right level in the right spot. Yeah, I did use it. Oh no, I used it for, oh gosh, what is it? Rune Dragons.
Rune Dragons. Yeah.
But, dude, I always thought this was a huge missed opportunity with the Baneite Ore, or with the Bane Bolts and stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you had bolts for more monsters, like, I think that'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, and it did add something special to ranged, I think, with that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of that whole silver bullet type, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's
yeah,
kind of cool.
And just for the record, the portable crafter doesn't allow you to actually tan stuff.
It doesn't?
No.
Well then.
Or no. No, it does. It does. It just doesn't give you it just doesn't give you extra.
Oh, it doesn't.
It just gives you a chance to save a hide or clay when you're crafting.
Oh, okay. So it's only on a hide. Okay.
Yeah. Or other things. Super Glass Make, they say this one now has the ability to turn Crystal Flex Sandstone and Red Sandstone into crystal and robust glass at the click of a button if you've completed their respective quests.
That one's nice, dude. That means you don't have to run from the bank. That's cool.
You know, I actually got 99 crafting off of Crystal Flask, believe it or not. That's how many of them I made.
I would believe it. Because you mine it with the porters, right? And then before...
Porters?
You do. Yeah.
The bank is like 5 steps away in right from the Crystal Sandstone area there.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I guess I was thinking about the sandstone. Well, still, I'm...
Okay, the Ooblock Sandstone, sure.
Yeah.
They've updated the icon on this, and they've removed the movement and action delay that occurred when casting the spell. And that's pretty much all we got for the lunar spell changes here. There's been a few other general fixes for these spells that has resulted in some renames. Starting off with that... Stat Restore Potion Share and Boost Potion Share have been combined into one spell called Potion Share. That's interesting, I guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the use case is for that.
Well, the use case is that it makes most tradable potions aside of the ones with negative side effects, such as Aggression Potions, Serodomin Brews, Zamorak Brews, and Power Bursts, all shareable now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's your use case right there.
That is really interesting.
Spiritualized food has been renamed to spiritual healing and no longer requires a piece of food to cast. The spell can now also extend familiar timers beyond the initial max time. And an issue has been fixed where the interface did not update to show that a familiar's life points were healed. The magic imbue spell, which you use for combo runecrafting, now is a buff bar icon that shows the remaining duration of the spell.
Okay.
Trollheim teleport has been the description of it has been updated to say it requires my arm's big adventure. And I think that's all I'm seeing here that we haven't talked about yet. Trollheim teleport renamed to Trollheim farm teleport. But, yeah.
You know, the sharing and the spiritual food, it seems like those fixes, if you could expand this lunar spellbook and have a true healer.
Yeah.
Could. Like, it's right there. Like, it's right there.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what I was thinking. I think the only thing you'd have to do is move those debuff spells that are in the standard spellbook or add some kind of variant to them in here. But there's also vengeance, I think, as well, too. So... Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you remember how many times we talked about having a support class in game.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we get these little ninja fixes and this moves us ever so much closer to that direction. Because I'm just trying to think of what else we would need. I mean, we have the potions. We have the food sharing. Actually,
we have stuff from Theron, too.
No, we don't actually have food sharing, because remember, spiritualized food is for familiars.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's what we're missing. We're missing a player version of that.
Yeah. An actual heal spell.
Yeah. Heal and heal other.
Yeah.
But, I mean, eh. I don't know that they heal enough.
Well, I might have to do some balancing and stuff, but I mean, I think it's there. It's there for the taking.
Heal other transfers up to 75% of the caster's life points to the targeted player, as long as the caster has at least 11% of their health.
See, that's cool. It just has too much of a cost.
Yeah.
On the healer caster.
Yeah. Now, what if you could do this except do it with food?
See, that might be the RuneScape way of doing it, huh?
Yeah. Because, you know, you could have this base version that's slightly more expensive and hurts you. And, I have an idea of how you could make this work. You take heal and heal other. Or sorry, heal other and heal group. And you make those the one-time, you know, instant heals of how much it's just going to stack on. It's going to be a one-shot heal, right? But what if there was another one that, and I don't even know what the name would be for it, but let's just say it was another lunar spell, and it used a piece of food in your inventory, and you cast it on a player. And what if that instead was a heal over time?
Oh, yeah.
So what you do is that, let's just say you have this stack of Rocktail in your inventory, you cast it on someone and it'll be a 2300 heal over time to that person. Maybe over 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be neat? Because if you did that, heal other, vengeance, spiritualize food, and allow you to use this. What if you could use spiritualized food on other people's familiars?
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool, too. But do familiars ever even really get hurt?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of an area where they would, but I can't. And perhaps that's why that they added onto spiritual healing the fact the spell can now extend timers beyond their initial max time.
Add a little more functionality to it.
Yeah. That's neat. And, you know, when you look at it that way, you kind of realize that we're almost there for having a healing kind of spell or a support kind of spell book. And that's really neat.
Yeah. Like I said, you can see it right there, you know. Like, I think it needs a little bit of balancing, a little bit of adding. But it's right there, man.
Yep.
And you know what? Maybe that is what we need to push a PVM that next to, you know, I mean, you've heard David say before, they've taken the mechanics with Solak as far as you can really take them. There's, at this, you know, what do you do now? Maybe you have to make it so another class comes in because you're getting hit hard. You need a healer now. Like, a tank is not enough.
They need different bosses for this because, you know, most people out there, PVM groups, you know, only go with, you know, one or two pieces of food in their inventory.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, but if you're wanting to, like, go to that next level on that next new boss, like, where do they go after Solak? Well, you could really go all out if you, you know, had a healing class or something like that. Because you're right. People don't even use food for the most part. Or, like, the really good people don't use food. I eat, like,
yeah.
Drunken Saber. Like,
yeah, I got it. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the Care Pack track.
Yeah.
So, with this one, this is, of course, the most recent addition to the Act Track collection of, I guess we could call it, microtransaction battle passy kind of progression events, you could say. 50 tasks, as you have had before in each time. Lots of very nice looking cosmetics with it. We got the Enchanter's Echo cosmetic override. Just to name a few things on that. And, you know, it includes the whole Enchanter's Echo gear and everything. For this is, of course, themed around Carapac and what we saw in Desperate Measures, to the point of even having replica Lanakea pieces of content. And you remember what you asked for at the end of Desperate Measures, right? And you're wondering why you didn't get it. Well, in the Carapac track, you can unlock the Thox Hand-Me-Down Hammer.
Yeah.
There's also the Mechaniac, which is a familiar override. And there's also, in addition to the Thox Hand-Me-Down Hammer, you can also get armor parts. There's also Stasis Armor, which was Dragonkin-inspired armor that unlocks at the very end, tier 50 on the premium track. Thox War Bunny, which is, once again, another of their cute items that they tend to be putting in these Yak tracks here. And you can, they actually have a little motion graphic of it that you can see on the RuneScape homepage for it in their notes for this update. And, you know, as with usual, all the cosmetics that are put into these Yak tracks are always grade A, which I think is wonderful. And, you know, I'm of the opinion at this point that if you're doing Yak track, you probably want to do it for the cosmetics. I think that's the way I see it, at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, this one they got me on. Because I saw it, the Carapac track, and I'm just like, ooh. I was just drawn to this one, and so I've probably done more tasks in this amount of time probably than any Yak track before. I think I'm on, like, I don't know, 14, 15, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow.
Starting to get
pretty
grindy.
That's higher than me.
Yeah, right.
I'm on number six.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often, so not on these Yak Tracks and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's starting to get a little bit grindy at this point, but
yeah, let's actually talk about some of the sticky tasks on here. Task 9, for example, and you're going to be kicking yourself if you didn't get that bonus here. It's cook 765 of any fish. And if you got to level 40 on the last one, you'll have had this 50% complete.
Oh.
The other option being to cook 165, or sorry, to catch 165 salmon or above.
Yeah, I think I did that.
Yeah. Task 6 would have been to smelt bars or smelt steel items, which is a smaller number. And, you know, I mean, steel smelts quick, so it's not too bad. But if you're looking at the smelting or fletching side, you're looking at 1,000 plus of the bars or willow shield bows and above at 6.
Yeah, and I think that doubles later because I know I just did a smelting that was, I could swear it was a couple thousand.
Yeah.
I could swear it was.
Divination ones are fast as always. So you'll always want to pick those. Another one that is, you know, I think really, 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 really pushing it is, let's just say you were 88 archaeology, you'd have to screen 672 soil for task 12. Or
yeah, I did that one.
Complete 26 occult or warp floors or slayer tasks.
Yeah, see, I mean, I don't know. You got to do the soil on that. I mean, you just got to.
You really have to. And it's a question of, are you going to, you know, gather that soil yourself or buy it? Because the auto screener actually doesn't work here.
Yeah, well, I had a bunch of soil from pre-auto screener days.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, here's an opportunity to burn through this. And I got to try the sift soil spell at the same time. So I'm like, all right, there we go.
Yeah, sift soil pretty good for this.
Yeah, well, if you do it at the archaeology guild, that material box is like, it's like right there. You literally just turn it around.
Yeah. Yeah. Task 13, we're looking at, you know, 2,000 plus snakeskin boots or combat potions and above. Maybe that's our combat potion reason right there. That's it, Tanis. It's right there. Yak Track Task 13. Kill 550 monsters, but that's basically two high-level slayer tasks, right?
Yeah, I just did Dagonoff. It took like 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, we also have to talk about the skill and kill task again, because this one isn't really explained well in-game, and the way it works is that at task 14, skill and kill, you got to do 40 increments of it, but nobody really says what it is, and you only get one progress every 3 minutes. So either what you're doing is you're effectively playing with this one for 2 hours.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it this way.
You don't want to do it that way.
Because the other option is smelt 2150 steel bars and above.
Oh, that was it. That was it. See, I knew that was the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And task 15. This is another one where you're going to, you know, 1370 smoke devil pouches and above. There's your goat horns again. Or 2,055 super anti-poisons and above.
That's what we're doing right now. Extremes. Extremes. Very expensive task.
Yeah. And then we see a new task here at task 16, which is to play minigames. Earn 25 Thaler. Which, I mean, is good if you're wanting to go around to the Spotlight minigame, or you have a clan.
I wonder what's on Spotlight. I hope it's like the ones I like.
or you can, of course, do this with your clan as well. And, you know, Clan Quest has weekly Saturday weekend mini game events like this. So that'd be a good place to do that. So that's good. Another new addition to the act track this time around is the lore task, which, you know, I think you definitely want to do on this one. And this is task two. It's a lore hunter one. You basically talk to the curator in Borthorpe and complete one of his tasks, and he sends you off to Anachronia for task one, and you effectively follow this beacon, and it gets you gathering some flowers and whatnot. And at the end of it, you meet up with Hannibus and Vindicta, and you get a juicy segment of lore on it.
It was cool.
Yeah, it really was. Really cool. And everybody in Clan Quest is all over this one. And I can say that these lore tasks are driving people in Clan Quest to do Yak Track. Sirion, for example, is really not a fan of Yak Tracks, and he just plays it casually. But he was saying that he actually feels like he should push through this Yak Track for the lore stuff.
It's so fun. She's such a hot-headed badass.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll talk. What we want to do with this is, in the same way we did the archaeology lore rundown, we want to do a Yak Track lore rundown. So we're going to wait a bit until a few of us have progressed further through the Yak Track, and then we'll talk about the lore ramifications from this Yak Track after that. But you remember last week when I said, gee, I wonder when Vindicta is going to show up?
All right. And remember what we talked about, like, putting lore in throughout the game?
Yeah, world building.
Part of world building, yeah. And here we go, a week later. All of a sudden, we have lore in a Yak Track, and we've never had that before.
Yeah.
So, I even enjoyed it when I picked that task up.
Yeah.
Like, this is cool.
And, you know, the lore hunter tasks come around somewhat frequently. Let me just see how many of them there are, actually, because I know there's – I think there's like one at level 2 and one at 20. Let me just have a look and see.
There's one before that because I missed one.
Oh, yeah. Number 8. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one I did. Or no, I haven't got there yet. Never mind. I'm lying. But there's 5 lore hunter tasks, and perfect. But, you know, I think one thing that we need to underscore that we did on last Yak Track as well is that we need to say that these things can't feel like a grind. Because I'm looking at task 41 right now, 1,800 Royal Vambraces and above, or 3,800 Charming Potions and above. That's an auto skip.
Yeah.
And skips did carry over from last time. You get 2 skips each time a Yak Track comes around, and we did get a bunch from the beach. But, you know, I'm worried. I'm worried that we're going to keep progressing down this direction of adding too much grind.
Well, they were supposed to be aware of that after the first one. There was a little bit some pushback on the grind, if you remember.
Yeah.
Now, from where I at, like, the tasks that I'm doing, like, right now, I'm working on, what was it, like, 1,800 potions. That's quite a bit.
You know, my method for the potion ones is to gather gather nightshade and make anti-poison, or make weapon poison and sell it for hideous amounts of money.
Huh. I'll be damned.
Yeah.
I guess that would have been better than spending money.
Yeah, because what you basically do is you go to the Scavid Caves, you use your porters, and then whenever you pick up the nightshade, it will automatically go to your bank with that.
Hmm. Nice step there, Shane.
And then all you have to do is buy coconut milk.
Not bad.
Or coconuts. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least I think porters work there, because I don't remember banking too much. I think porters have to work there.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at what you just said with task 41, it's not that much more than where I'm at 15. So, I mean, I think it's okay at this point.
Well, it's 3,800 versus 2,000.
I mean, 2,000 kind of sucks, but it's not. I mean, that I don't think it's too atrocious. Like, it takes a while, but it's not too bad, right? I don't think it's too bad. Hey, John from RuneScape.
Yeah, 23 is archaeology or herb lore. You know, depending on your level, it's anywhere from 137 to 203 Imperial Iron or above, or 2695 Adrenaline Potions or above. So I think that's an easy choice for archaeology. And as with the last Yak Track, doing tasks for clues is also here, and also doing clues to complete tasks is also here. Task 25 is complete 12 Slayer tasks or bury 1,000 bones of any type or ashes. And then task 26 is 2955 Adrenaline Potions above or skill and kill. Spend 3 hours effectively, 60 increments of this, either just, you know, skilling or doing stuff.
That's not actually as bad. That bury and scatter, that wouldn't be as bad. You literally could do scatterberry.
Right.
And be done.
Yeah,
quick.
And you know, the good part about that is that you stand next to a bank, just use the withdrawal all option on some bones, put it on the action bar, and away you go.
Yeah.
And for anybody who keeps track of this kind of thing, you get big bones from your Saren spirits. Just keep those in between Yak Tracks and do that when it comes to one of these prayer quick tasks. Bones. That's what I do. That's what I do. Twenty-seven, earn archaeology XP or smith or smelt 4,600 Necronium bars and above, or pickpocket paladins and above.
Oh, you could pickpocket?
Yeah, for that one. That's a smelting or thieving.
So you just priff it, right? I mean, you just go priff it. Yeah.
Farming one, 35, not too bad. Task 30, thieving or fire making, 4,690 magic logs and above to burn, or 4,690 Yanel watchmen and above. And the crafting side is 450 dragon leather at or above red dragon hide chaps.
The craftings aren't all that bad.
No, and I mean, if you have the hides, it's not going to be a big deal, but it's still a question of outputting money rather than making money.
That's true.
Here's going to be one that people are going to be wondering about. 34, earn 30 Thaler or string 2,200 magic short bows and above.
See, that depends on what's on special. If Soul Wars ain't on Spotlight, then we stringing some bows.
Yeah. And then here's another one, 36. You're either going to craft 570 soul runes and above, so just soul runes, or 1,600 bones buried.
Yeah, see, I'm not crafting soul runes. I can't craft soul runes.
Here's another difficult one. 14 warp floors or fire making or cooking. That's 2,875 elder logs and above being burnt, or 2,875 sharks and above being cooked.
Okay, well, the cooking one wouldn't be too.
No, the cooking one wouldn't, but no way are you going to burn 2,800 elder logs.
Nah.
And 14 warp floors, that's an entire day.
I ain't doing one floor.
Yeah.
That's a skip in my book.
Yeah, that's a good few hours there to do that.
No, the only time I'm doing any floors ever if it's with my friends and there are beverages involved. Otherwise, I'm never going back.
What about this one? Task 40, kill 3,500 monsters or complete the Heffen agility course and above 200 times.
Ugh. See, I think you got to kill stuff, right? Or skip. That one's a really long one. That's gonna take a while.
And this is the grind that we're talking about. And You know, I want people to complete this, but I also hope at the same time the metrics will come back and say that tasks like task 40 here are too grindy.
Yeah.
Task 41, 1,800 royal dragonhide vambraces and above, or 3,805 charming potions and above.
So the vambraces ain't too bad. I think the biggest problem...
But it's the cost of doing
so. It's the cost, yes. That, I was going to say that. That's the issue. Like, I don't think it's the grindiness, but the cost is... It's going to be killing you in the
end. On both of those, based on what you were talking about in our market segment. Task 43, fishing or mining, 370 high-level fisher or screen 6,100 soil at 120. So a little bit less than that in between. But still, I mean, you're going to do the fishing and mining on that one.
Yeah, I don't know how long the fishing would take. Like, I think you could do that soil would be, that's like an hour.
Okay.
15, hour and a half, maybe.
And then we step into a level of absurdity here. Task 46. Sit down. Make sure you don't fall out of your chair. 136 warp floors or 136 half and agility courses and above.
Or
5,000 monsters.
Oh, Lord. That's a skip. They're putting the screws to you in the end.
That's a skip.
That's a skip.
And
they gave me 8 of them, right? So from 42 on,
well,
that's it.
I mean, you had 6 before coming in because you get 2 each time a new yak track begins.
Okay.
And, you know, with the last one in the summer, we had a chance to get skips at the beach. But this one ends November 2nd, so we're not going to have Halloween as an event to get skips from.
No.
So skips aren't going to be handed out this time.
But you could still get skips from...
We'll talk about that in just a minute here. I just want to highlight these last couple tasks. Task 48, complete 30 Slayer tasks or bury or scatter 2,000 for prayer. Bones or soil, ashes. And then,
I wonder what level it has to be.
I don't know.
What tier?
I don't know. The wiki doesn't say on that. But task 50 is restore artifacts of level 61 or higher. And you're looking at doing 49 of those. Or skill and kill for 140 cycles, which is 420 minutes. Or 7 hours.
Holy crap. See, that one should be time served, right?
It should be like, time that you're in the game and getting XP. Yes, not, you know, once every 3 minutes. And that's what it doesn't say on the tin that you find out horribly if you're trying to figure out why this isn't incrementing. But we learned the hard way last time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like, it starts off easy, but it just keeps ramping up and up and up. And I have serious questions about whether or not people are going to burn out from this.
Well, from 40 on, it gets pretty nuts, yeah.
Yeah, I think the last yak track between task 42 and 50, I used 6 skips.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. I'll be doing the same.
And, you know, I'll just have to say, I didn't buy any skips last time. I was fortunate enough to get them from the beach before they were toned down. But they have a new method of getting skips this time, and they're calling it the Yak Track Attack. From now until November 2nd, a bunch of Twitch streamers are going to be moving through the Karapak track, and when they reach specific milestones, which we don't know what they are, the news post says that those Twitch streamers will be rewarded with bonds plus all the other awesome rewards from the track itself to give to their viewers. So you want to progress another way through Yak Track, watch the Twitch streamers of the RS Guy, Makeru, RS Rav, Scaredy Ginge, and Zilandra. And I have 2 issues with this, but first, how do you feel about it?
I don't really like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all. I think when... Do you remember when they would have actual JMods come to somewhere in game and how special that was.
Yeah, the love letters.
Love letters, stamp, there's passport stamp, something like that maybe could have been done. But this, you know how many RF streamers there are? A lot more than those four.
Yeah.
Or five.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a matter of the rich getting richer, right? So now you're going to be funneling people away that might have been watching smaller streamers. Now they have to watch bigger streamers to try to get their skips. And I don't know, man. I mean, if I had my pick, if I had to, I'd probably watch the RS guy, but, you know, I don't know. I just don't think they should. This is one I would have stayed away from.
Yeah.
If I was JX. Yeah.
And my two problems on this are, the first is, like you mentioned, if you're going to do something like this, do it through official channels with the JAGX team. Do it through the live streams like they do Lootscape. Do it through, like you said, the in-game JMod activities like they would do the love letters and the passport stamps and the raffle tickets and so on and so forth. Do it that way. Where
it was special, you know? I call it JMod, you know?
Like, right. And you know, you go find, say, Mod Porky in-game, for example, and you go find maybe four other JMods for five of them, and you get a boost to your current task. It's not 100% completion, but maybe it makes it 50% complete.
Right, yeah.
Do it that way. Rather than, you know, just rewarding bonds out there where people are going to purchase these skips or use them for whatever in that case. Because, you know, this isn't even – those bonds aren't even guaranteed to be used for Yak Track with that, right? Someone could go buy Treasure Hunter keys. Someone could go buy membership.
You gain a lot of eyes and a lot of traffic if you can do giveaways. But a lot of people can't afford to be doing giveaways like that. And Jagex is just handing them bonds. They're going to get a lot of eyes out of that. They're going to get a lot of viewers, a lot of subscribers. It's a sweet deal for the streamers. I mean, good work if you can get it.
Yeah. And you know, problem number one being official channels versus streamers. Problem number two that I see is instead of having their viewers actually complete the Yak Track themselves and take part in that journey, they're just getting the rewards up front for it, which is kind of defeating the purpose of the content.
Yeah.
So those are my two. Those are my two.
It isn't the same.
Those are my two big beefs with this. And, you know, granted, you can say, sure, that if you don't want to do this now, there'll be an opportunity in the future to buy the cosmetics from the Oddman store. Yes, we know that. But the point is that they're creating a different kind of exclusivity here around the streaming community for the people who might go and watch those. Whereas, you know, what's to say ordinary RS player wants to go watch a streamer? What if they wanted to do something in-game instead? So that kind of encapsulates the two ways I see this here. And, you know, I really hope that this is a pilot program because, you know, I don't particularly know how this was organized and what the process was for this. But I hope that this isn't a way to bring forward progression through Yak Track for everybody else. And I just hope it's a more of a community engagement pilot program. Because if it's a community engagement pilot program, then fine, try it out. But if it's a way to create progression through Yak Track, then that's a whole different beast. And we have to have a conversation about that. Because that means that the Yak Tracks then are being built as too grindy.
Absolutely. Or you do this in another way, like you said, you know. I'm just not a fan. And I'm not, I mean, here's the thing, like, I'm not a fan of any of those streamers, really. Like, in all reality.
Yeah.
Just not really a big fan, so why do I have to watch them?
Like, that's the only way. To progress through something in your game, or to get bonds to buy a skip, right?
Right, and I don't really, I mean, I don't care for them that much. Like, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And, you know, I'm sure that these are all very fine people in their own ways, but everybody listed here is not everyone's cup of tea. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on to the patch notes. I think I've said all I need to say on the Carapac track. As always, for me, the thing that drives me to complete these Yak tracks is the cosmetics. And now the lore.
Yep.
So I can think
of it. I had to have the stick.
The stick? The fox stick?
I had to have the stick, yeah.
All right. Let's just go through some quick general patch notes then for this week, because most everything else was lunar related. Lunar spells that have yet to be unlocked will now appear unhighlighted and let the player know how to unlock them, which of course means Poly and Polaris. Or magic. Replaced various instances of the word inventory with backpack in the lunar spellbook descriptions and info/error messages. And 1-5 dose juju flasks and combination potions that previously weren't tradable have been made tradable player to player. I wonder what was missing. So I thought they all were tradable. Oh well.
Yeah, I thought they all were too.
You will now be given an example effigy during the effigy incubator tutorial, so it's less confusing when it's taken away. Okay, good. An issue that caused effigy pets to show incorrect colors when textures were turned off has been resolved. And once again, here we're looking at the legacy going down, how you can play RS on an entirely modern computer, or you can go back to something that really only has integrated graphics and it'll work. And finally, Iron Man accounts that have been invited to become a player moderator will now correctly show their respective Iron Man icons in broadcasts. All right. So, some big news today from Jagex. RuneScape is coming to Steam on October 14th.
Woo! Can you believe it?
I think this is going to be a pretty big deal. You know, I think we always knew something like this was going to be possible because everybody's always said, you know, can we get RuneScape on an Xbox, for example? Or can we get it on Steam so we can have Steam achievements? And, you know, people have asked for that time and time again. And now here is the answer that was unveiled with this.
I always thought, like, it's just good advertising. Like,
absolutely.
Sometimes you just kind of browse through Steam when you're looking for something, like, you know, you're just browsing around and like, what if you didn't know about RuneScape? Oh, a lot of RuneScape players don't even talk about RuneScape, right? That's kind of like our, you know what I mean? Like, that's our thing.
Yeah.
We don't really talk about it much. So like, I always wonder, like, why wouldn't they, you know, why isn't it on Steam? And especially because they had Idle Adventures on Steam and Chronicle.
Yep.
So they're,
yep.
I didn't see any reason why RuneScape shouldn't be on there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a bit harder, I think, to put an existing game on Steam than it is to put a brand new game on Steam, because Steam has opened up over the years, and if you are an indie game publisher, you can put your game on Steam with that. And, you know, the page is actually live right now if you actually wanted to go in there and have a look, and they actually want people to add it to their wish list, so it will help generate traction for it. So the Steam page for RuneScape is definitely up, and you can put it in your wish list and build that traction for it. There was also a live stream this week, and we're kind of going to do double duty here and talk about the live stream and this at the same time. Now, with this announcement, as Maud Warden said in the live stream, it's the beginning of a new growth era in terms of bringing RuneScape to Steam, because it's a big piece of building the cross-platform strategy and bringing new blood into the game, which is something he's been talking about quite a bit.
And I like this cross-platform strategy.
Do you remember the Miniclip era?
The Miniclip era?
Yeah, after RS2 came out in 05 or 06, I think it was.
That would have been before my time.
RuneScape 2 was on Miniclip, and it was one of the huge growers of the community back then. So I see this as the modern incarnation of that. And, you know, the very fact he highlights that this is the beginning of a new growth era says what the whole idea behind this is doing. Sure, it's nice to have a game on Steam and everything, but it's all about bringing these new players into the game. And, you know, we've seen updates over the last year for the first-time user experience and whatnot. And I think one of the questions that comes from this is that how many of these new players who start playing are going to stick? And is this, in its own way, in its own earnest way, primarily a method of bringing new players into the game, above all else?
Probably, right?
Yeah. Because, like, it's nice to have the cross-platform stuff, but I think the main reason is growth on there. And, you know, I think that if you look at this, if you look at the marketing that they're doing with this in terms of bringing the players in, it'll be interesting to see in a year time how many of those people stick around, how many of them become members, and with that, is it going to have any negative side effects to it? I personally can't think of anything, but I'm just putting this out there that at the end of the day, sure, you can bring all these people in, but is it going to really supercharge the game in the way they want?
Well, there could be one potential downside that I can
see. All right.
And that is, if they are not ready on the free-to-play side to make the game interesting and hook people in the beginning, then those people walk away talking about RuneScape sucks.
Yep.
And that puts exactly. you in a worse position than when you
exactly.
began.
Exactly.
So that's the, you know, I don't think that's going to happen, but that is something to be thinking about, and you know, especially on a free-to-play side.
You know what I'm going to do?
Side.
On the Monday or Tuesday before this launches, I'm going to make a new RS account and say I've never played before when they ask. And I'm going to see how the tutorial and first-time onboarding goes.
Oh, yeah, I'll be interesting.
Because you raise a really good point there. That's always been a sticking point. It's something that users of our age and era don't really think about because, you know, we're well past that. So that's a very good question. Very good question. And we'll have to keep our eye on that. He also said that it's going to be one RuneScape community with no fragmentation. If you purchase or progress on your Steam account, that progress will follow you forward, and it will have all the Steam bells and whistles of achievements, trading cards, emotes, badges, and pretty much all the Steam features will be available.
That's cool.
There will also be 20 Steam achievements, and existing achievements will port over when you link your account. So
I wonder which ones they're going to be. Like, if it'll be like Maxine. Or,
yeah, I don't know.
I wonder which one they're going to be.
Because they say there's going to be 20 Steam achievements. So when they also say existing achievements will port over and there's going to be 20 Steam achievements, does that mean there's going to be 20 exclusive Steam achievements plus everything we have in game currently?
Oh. Huh.
Or is it just going to be those 20 Steam achievements with parallels in the main game? You see the direction I'm going for on this, right?
I think.
Okay. Fair enough. Because it's something I think that we definitely need to ask about on that, because it's an important question.
I took it as like the ones that we have in game are going to be the ones over there.
That's what I thought too.
20 they were picking.
That's what I thought, too, until it says that there's only 20 of them. There's also going to be 20 trading cards as well, which they previewed on the live stream. I can see the Stone of Jazz. I can see a Penguin. I can see Telos. I can see Ariane. I see a sword. I think that's the God Sword. And Bob is also there.
I don't know what you do with those, but I want them all.
Yeah. I mean, I've never collected Steam trading cards, but I guess, I mean, this might be a good time to start.
I don't really, like, if I just have what I have from, like, I've never bought anything
yeah.
or traded
anything. Yeah, and you know, the sad fact is most of them are only worth a few cents each.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The badges are, I don't know how many of these they're going to be, but ones they show are the Max Cape, the Comp Cape, Skill Cape, Legends Cape, Master Quest Cape. So those are some Steam badges that you'll be able to unlock. And also Steam emotes that are all, of course, god-themed. The six main gods of Armadil, Ceridoman, Zamorak, Bandos, Zaros, and Guthix. And, you know, I think following from your question that you asked previously about what this means for the community on this and integration, it was also said in the live stream that if you purchase something on Steam, it will follow you into game. And if you purchase something that's not on Steam and you play on Steam in general, you'll still be able to access it. So it's going to progress forward on that. But one other question that will come out with this is, will Jagex be taking part in the Steam's Christmas and summer sales? Where, you know, you see things up for 50% off, right? So potentially with this, you get to the Steam Christmas sale, you're going to see Yak Track go 30% off. Or sorry, Premier Club go 30% off on Steam.
Probably not, but I bet you could see membership like that. You would see like get 3 months for two, something like we've seen like the summer sale.
And that would be perfect for the summer sale timing, I think, too, with that. And for people who are wondering, is this going to be a Steam exclusive? No, you're not going to need to effectively use Steam to play RS. You can play RS in any way you want. Use whatever client you want. You can link your accounts, but if you wanted to, you know, after that, play with just the standard vanilla RS client, that's fine too. Now,
that's cool.
I guess the next question that came from this was, where do they go next? And, you know, chat was asking all about this, and Mod Warden specifically mentioned places like the Epic Store and consoles at some point too. But, you know, that's of course a different discussion for their interaction model.
Right. But they can definitely get on Epic.
And that's going to be an interesting one itself.
I mean, I don't think there really is.
Not really. Work was done by all hands to ensure the Steam launch is smooth, which, I mean, like you said, that's something you definitely want. They said they were checking all their I's and T's for server quality and speed, so that's good. With that, player support, they were also working on, which, I mean, if you read online, that's a mixed bag of how support works. I've never had to use them, so I'm not sure myself. How can players help? Welcoming with open arms. Maybe spread the word a bit. Start talking about what it's like to be a new RuneScape player.
Get ready for positive reviews and leave them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's, you know, something all our podcast listeners should probably do if you're willing as well.
Yeah, because I know that when I'm on Steam, I look at that. Like, I look at that if it's mixed, if it's positive, very positive, overwhelming positive. Like, I pay attention to that because I've been, you know. Yeah. Been burned too many times.
Steam accounts will be one-to-one, so one Steam account for one RS account. So if you have multiple RS accounts, you'll have to pick which one you link.
Yeah, see, that's the dilemma. Do I start a new account for Steam?
Ooh!
Or do I connect it with Junior? Or what do I do?
I don't know.
I haven't decided.
There's also going to be Steam DLC packages on launch for membership. And cosmetics, and after some time, these cosmetics will be made available to other players. Bonds will not be tradable on the Steam Marketplace, and there is no direct rune score for Steam achievements, but by doing them, you will get rune score since there's parallel achievements in-game. So this kind of, I think, muddies the waters, and we're not going to know exactly how this works until we get our hands on this.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, that tells us nothing. Okay.
Yeah. All right. But I think the thing that players need to take away from this at the end of the day, and I'll tell this to everybody listening to this if you're looking at this, I think it's safe to say at this point that by expanding out to Steam, RuneScape is opening up to an entire new potential cross-section of players who might not have heard of it before. And you know, I've always said and heard from people that everybody always says, hey, everybody who's playing this game is almost maxed. Everybody who's playing this game is, you know, almost 1500 plus level. And I'm sure it's not that way. We don't know what the demography looks like, but people always feel as though that RuneScape is a game that was struggling to get new players to come in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like who's here is who's here.
And if this launch and the mobile launch are successful in doing that, and we see a new selection of players coming in and they stick, then that's wonderful. But if they don't stick, then we have to start asking some questions about the early game, I think.
Yeah.
So, and in many ways, you could also see this as a dry run for the mobile launch for RS2 because – or sorry, RuneScape 3, because you need to have a game ecosystem that is well-rounded enough that it can handle a deluge of new players, and testing that out on Steam first is perhaps a very good idea.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, nobody wants to be the next Fall Guys, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think in closing this off, I'll just quote a bit from the Mod Warden blog post that was put out with this. He says that we also know that reaching new audiences makes modernizing RuneScape and scaling our operations and improving accessibility be more important than ever before. And he's also asking the team to double down and focus on these areas to better support the new influx of players that we'll be welcoming together over the years ahead, and that the mobile launch is the next step on the strategy going forward. Which means, of course, improving early game experience, onboarding and readability, and optimizing the UI.
See. So they know, you know.
Yeah.
He knows.
And I mean, it's obvious, and it's just a question of, is it too soon for this, right? Because Old School is actually launching on Steam in 2021.
Really? And that's such a more... It's
early 2021. We don't have an exact date, but that's what they say.
Well, good. Put the flagship out there first.
Yeah.
For once.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, I guess we just wait for the 14th now and... fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
I'll be ready. Be ready with my review.
All right. Before we wrap this up and move on to questions, just a reminder that the Golden Gnome finalists are out there, so you can go vote for all of the categories that you want to put your vote in for. I am pleased to say that of the folks that we highlighted on the podcast here, Zach Spieler got an honorable mention for Best RuneScape Artist, and Chaos Elemental is a nominee for Best RuneScape Artistic Creation with their Hard Fall fan fiction.
Oh, cool. That's cool. I'm fan fiction made it.
Yay. Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed that Gawky didn't get in there with their musical compositions, but oh well. That's too bad. All right. We're going to move on to questions and, of course, thank our Patreon supporters. But first, you know, we had the opportunity, as we mentioned earlier on in the show, to have a bit of a sit down and do an episode with Mod Warden this week. And that episode's in the can and will be airing next week. But what do you say to a little teaser of that right now? You ready for that?
Oh, we gotta give the people what they want, Shane.
Yeah. So this discussion we had covered everything from Mod Warden's first year as executive producer to strategic vision for the next 20 years, content release cycles, and of course a topic that everybody is familiar with and loves to talk about: in microtransactions. So let's have a bit of a listen on what he had to say about microtransactions in one of our segments.
Yeah.
We've also upped our game on our experiments. in what we're doing, but we're doing that, right? So it's not all about Treasure Hunter at the end of the day. The things that we said we are changing about Treasure Hunter, right, is like, I don't want it to be a loot box, flat out. I just don't want it to be a loot box, right? I want the blind chance aspect to not be there. That's not what we want to do as a game, right?
And this so is something I was actually going to ask at the later on in this segment, and I'm not going to ask for a timeline on this because I don't think it's realistic, but can you commit to removing loot boxes or at least the chance-based mechanics from RuneScape microtransactions?
Yeah, I want to remove the blind chance aspect of it. I want it to be transparent. I want the odds, you know, if we have odds even, right? And I don't even know if we'll stick with us as a content plan in the long term. We actually find other experiments that are actually better.
And you might be wondering, what exactly are those experiments? Well, we went through those on this episode. Potentially different ways of monetizing the game, and you know what works for everybody else might not be the exact right fit for RuneScape. So what exactly does that look like? Is it a copy and paste of, say, a battle pass, or is it something different? Or is it something to do with oddments? Well, you just have to wait and see for next week. And that was just one of the segments that we talked about on monetization. But I think that was a fun talk and an episode, hey?
It was my favorite episode to date. I had such a good time. And dude, Mod Warden he's cool. Like, everything that I thought was verified and then some. So it's cool. I can't wait for everyone to hear it.
Yeah, so that'll be coming out next week in the usual episode spot. So fingers crossed we don't have a surprise new skill or anything, which I don't think is happening. There's like probably a less than a million to one chance of that happening. But, I mean, you never know. We've been blindsided before. But, yeah, it'll be a fun listen. And I think at the end of the day, people will come away from this and see a bit more into what Warden's MO is and how he sees RuneScape and what he wants the next 20 years to look like and how you can actually pay for that. Because, you know, I think that's something that everybody talks about, right? Microtransactions and monetization. But when it comes down to it at the end of the day, there isn't a really good forum to have those discussions. And we did that here, which was good. So hopefully everybody will take something from this at the end and give players a reason to be hopeful on that. So,
nope.
But in any case, I would also like to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because that's very important too. So this week I'd like to thank Andrew C, Brock H, Cameron, CGB900, Christian S, Danny W, Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jade W, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Samantha R, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support and making the podcast what it is. And if you're wondering what this is all about, just head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. You can sign up there for as little as $1 a month. You get access to our monthly bits. Next one will be about an alternate history of what would have happened if Invention would have launched first over Prif. And if in doing so and supporting the podcast, you also fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. At $3 a month, we also have a VIP tier where you get a special mention at the start of the month and high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And we have the insider version at $5 a month where you get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show in addition to everything else. So for as little as $1 a month, you get access to more than 2 years of monthly bits and a whole lot more. You can learn more at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
And I should also mention that we'll be doing our round table next weekend on October 3rd on the Saturday. We'll do that after the Mod Warden episode airs, and we can have a bit of a Patreon discussion on that episode and field questions, so to speak, about how it was to be with Mod Warden. So if you're interested in coming to a round table, subscribe for as little as $1 a month. Thanks so much, everyone. All right, two questions this week. First one from Samantha R. I'm taking a small break from RuneScape and will probably come back when the next Yak Track comes back, so I want to cancel my subscription. And in the reasons why you cancel, they do not have an option to say you're taking a break or nothing like that. Do you think this would be helpful, a helpful option for them to see which players are taking a break and wanting to come back? Any thoughts? I think that's interesting. From a marketing standpoint, because when you look at it, it's a question of, you know, that, gosh, what are we up to for the price? $9.99 a month, base, right? So if somebody is, you know, wanting to save $10 a month, cause they're not going to be playing for a few months, it would, you know, if you were to ask if they were going to be back, what you would, I think, perhaps want to do with that is maybe opt them into some kind of email communication on that, for that matter. And, you know, I don't know. I think the vast majority of the time people quit RS, they wind up coming back in six months or maybe a few years later. But I don't know. I'm trying to think offhand of how many people have actually quit and never come back. And that number's pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, that number is probably pretty low. And I'm of two minds of this. Like, if you wanted to have that on there just so you knew that for your own analytics, that would be fine. But if this is to save, like, a grandfathered rate, then I'm not really in support of that.
That's interesting, because I didn't even think of that at all as saving a grandfathered rate.
Well, I mean, I just didn't – I don't know if that's what's getting at or not, but
– yeah. And, you know, I think the only benefit to this would be analytics, and I'm with you on that as well. And, I mean, at that, maybe if we're talking about grandfathered rates, increase the amount of time you have for it to lapse, take it up from, you know, like the I think it's, what, 1 month now? Maybe make it three or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it'd be good for analytics, but on the same time, I mean, I don't like putting it in this way because I know there's lots of people who really love this game, and but the way businesses look at this is either you're paying or you're not, and it's almost a binary thing, because if you're paying, their job is to figure out how to retain you, right? And if you're not paying, it's how do you get them to pay? That's effectively two states there, right? And it's just moving between those two states. So, and, you know, I think a better question to ask, and one that you could ask in addition to that about if you'd be back, is what would make you come back sooner, if at all?
Yeah.
And, I mean, in general, when you're doing an exit survey like that, you want to make it so that it's only, you know, maybe 3 to 5 questions tops in one page, and make them, you know, quick yes, no, bullet point, quick fire answers. Because you don't want to, you know, subject someone to a survey when they might not be interested in your product. And, you know, there's a game I play out there called World of Tanks, on and off. And the funny part about that is sometimes you won't have logged in for months, right? And then when you log in, you get this survey that takes you 25 minutes to fill out.
Oh, boy.
About your gameplay experience. Yeah.
Ugh.
And, I mean, you got to wonder what the retention on this is. But the point is that you don't want to necessarily subject people to doing a long survey like that.
Well, so you're just not going to get the answers you want. They're just going to click out of it and be like, whatever, we're done.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that answers your question. Next one from Mr. Ling. Will you guys be doing the Yak Track for the Lore Hunter tasks so you don't have to do them when they become permanent content later? Absolutely.
I messed up and I did miss one, but I'm planning on doing all the rest.
And we will have a lore summary episode on this as well, because we got to cover this because like we said, it's world building and it's very important. So.
Oh yeah.
100%, 100% behind the lore tasks, and I will be doing them.
And what I've seen so far, because I mean, I did the first one. There's some good stuff in there. Like, it's some fun story.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, I think we can move on right now to tech news. But in closing, I'll just remind everybody that if you want to send your questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also send them in to our Twitter account @rsbnb, or you can post them on the forums at update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right, tech news. Do you use a password manager?
On the Apple one on my phone.
Okay. Well, yeah. There's a number of password managers out there. There's, of course, LastPass. There's also 1Password, which is the primary macOS, iOS premium password manager that you pay for. But there's also a Windows version of 1Password. And, you know, in addition with passwords, there's always the question of what do you do with your credit cards, right? Or debit cards, right? And because there's always a question, you know, do you use this account at this, you know, random retailer that you just found? Or are you going to, you know, put it through an obfuscation service like PayPal instead? And, you know, many people just want the convenience of a credit card, but they don't want to put their actual number out there. So 1Password this week has a new virtual credit card feature, which is done through a partnership of privacy.com, which is a company that is only usable in the US right now, unfortunately. But what privacy.com is it effectively allows you to create a credit card that's useful for, say, only Netflix or only Apple. And then you can put a limit on it per month and say you're only allowed to withdraw this much per month with this card. And each number, each card that you create has its own unique number on it. And with that, it prevents your actual credit card from getting out there if there was ever a data breach or you wanted to use it on perhaps a lesser known retailer out there that you might not trust. So the idea behind this with 1Password is you can now create a privacy card. You can set a spending limit. You can have it be either a one-time limit, so you can effectively create one-time use credit cards with this. You can have it be a monthly limit, an annual limit, or just have it be a limit that will exist in perpetuity, and once you hit that, the card will be dead. And, you know, this is actually a really interesting service, and it's a shame it's only available in the United States. So I think if anybody wants an easy-to-use password manager that's combined with privacy.com service, 1Password is probably the thing to go with right now, and I'm jealous of all you people in the U.S. that can use privacy.com.
Yeah, this is cool. Like, I hate it when I can't use PayPal
right.
on something, so, like, this is
because
great.
PayPal is that layer of protection between you and your bank account or you and your credit card.
Yep.
And privacy.com does that, but now it's going to be baked into 1Password. Which is actually something. They say they have plans to expand internationally, but we don't know when that will be yet. You know, honestly, I think if somebody is wanting to pay, this moves 1Password into the realm of the hands down recommendation. Of course, if you're wanting something free, probably LastPass for the password manager because they support that, and they also have a paid version which offers Cloud Sync and whatnot. But I think I'm going to have to move my recommendation to 1Password on this, even with their Windows version, because they started out as an iOS Mac password manager, but they also have Windows clients now as well. So,
huh.
Yeah.
Well, what's the keychain then, Shane?
That's an Apple specific feature. It's effectively a way of storing your passwords. Your passwords are stored in your secure enclave on your device if it's an iPhone or a newer Mac computer, and you use either your PIN code or your fingerprint or your face ID, and then that unlocks a secure enclave and gives you access to your password manager. And, you know, for 90% of the people out there, the built-in password manager in iOS is good enough to use. I wouldn't use the password managers in the browsers like Chrome or Firefox because they often store them as plain text, not encrypted. But don't use the browser ones. Okay. Don't use the browser ones. Use the one on your iOS device or use something like 1Password or LastPass.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe at some point we should do a segment on these password managers because I think I just threw you for one.
Yeah, you did. I'm like, what? It's not encrypted. Like, are you serious?
Yeah, anybody can go into your things and find it, right?
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think you might be able to secure it somehow in Chrome. I think – no, it still stores it as text, but you have to give them your Google password in order to unlock that. So I'm not exactly sure how secure the password manager in Chrome is, but I know the browser ones used to be really, really bad.
Well, it's not for me, Taylor.
Yeah, so I mean, at this point, you want to use something like 1Password or LastPass, honestly. That's going to be your best action. So, I mean, 1Password is cheap. Really cheap for this service. It's $3 a month.
Oh, yeah.
Or $5 a month for a family.
Oh, yeah, that's really cheap.
Yeah. And, you know, for the peace of mind of a password manager, encrypted, they also have a travel mode for borders. Now, also privacy.com. So, there's no reason not to use it.
Now, once they get a VPN, then I'm all in. Give me the bundle.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have a VPN. That's an interesting question. Because, you know, with a lot of these companies that have security in their name, they really do one thing and they do that one thing well. And if they start moving away from that, you wind up with a Norton kind of thing where they don't do anything very well.
Right, yeah.
So
poor guys.
All right. Next piece of tech news is that leading app developers form something known as the Coalition for App Fairness. The idea behind this is to promote competition and protect digital innovation on digital platforms. This includes representatives from companies such as Basecamp, Blix, Blockchain.com, Deezer, Epic Games, European Publishers Council, Match, the dating site, News Media, Europe, Prepare, Proton Mail, Sky Demon, Spotify, and Tidal, just to name a few. And of course, the biggest ones in there being Spotify and Epic with this. And what this effectively is you'll note that, of course, both Epic and Spotify have had spats before with the Apple App Store, but it's not only against the Apple App Store, it's against any kind of ecosystem out there that is not fair, is the way developers see it. And when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, Epic broke their contract with Apple on that. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that it's good to have ideals and good to fight for things like this, but this is a better way of doing it than attempting to break the App Store model on your own, because you might have that momentum around it.
Hey man, join the revolution, unionize. I'm down. This is like a, you know, they're fighting back. People's got the, we got the torches and the pitchforks. Watch out, Apple. We're at the gates.
Well, it's not just Apple as well. I mean, it's other platforms as well, like Amazon, Steam, even.
But it's the huge entities out there, right? This is the Google store, the Apple store, the gatekeepers, right? I mean, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, with this, it doesn't exactly say what action they're going to take with this, just that they're forming as a group.
It's weird, like, I don't really know what you call it, because it's not like it's workers. It's other companies. What is that, Shane? What would you... Uh-oh. Is this like... Well, this isn't a cartel, though, right?
No, it's not a cartel. And it's not an oligopoly either. I'm sure there's a name out there. And, you know, if you look at their issues, their main issues are anti-competitive policies, as you see it. The 30% app tax, and also the no consumer freedom side of it. So many, many things that they aim to be pushing for on this. And, you know, as with most things, I don't know exactly what they aim to accomplish with this. And their methodology isn't set out in stone. And perhaps that's why Epic went the way they did, attempting to, you know, just blow things up rather than, you know, take a method like this, right?
Yeah, I mean, that could be. But remember, like, that tax that they're putting on those guys, you're paying for in the end. It's not like it's coming out of their pocket. They're just going to charge you more. So, it's in the interest of everybody to have fair practices.
Right, and you know, it's a question of the devs if they want to make that choice and say, do we go forth and join this, right? Or do we, you know, roll our own solution and come up with something else? And I'd like to see what their plans are for this, but I'm looking at their website right now, and I don't see what they want to do. I just see that they've banded together. So we'll keep an eye on this. Next, Amazon Luna, another game streaming service.
I'm so curious, like, will it be good? Will it be bad? I don't know. But I can tell you this, like, I'm really, really starting to come around to game streaming services. I've always been kind of interested in them. I dabbled with the PS Now on PC. And then when I got Game Pass, that really, really opened my eyes to how good those are for, for disabled gamers especially, because you get a chance to try so many games and you're not like you're not buying a game and then finding out, oh, I can't play this.
Yeah, this is streaming, not like Game Pass, where you actually download the game and run it. So, I mean, in theory, with this, it'd be able to run on any computer that has an internet connection.
Right, yeah, this is more like the Sony version.
Yeah.
But, I'm a big fan of this, because we have it with movies, we have it with everything else, and like I said, I really think there's something to that, not having to buy a game, and being able to actually try it. Because, I mean, back in the day, some of our listeners are probably too young to even remember this. Games used to have demos, right? You used to get a little demo disc, and you'd play the first level or something, you know, like it'd be a short thing. But it'd be enough for you to get a taste on if you could play it, if you couldn't, if you liked it, if you didn't, you know. And we just don't get that anymore. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You're either like all in or you're not. And everyone knows how the return thing works with games. It's not fun. It's usually pretty brutal. Steam's a little bit better now than they used to be. But I don't know. I'm real curious of what kind of games they're going to have on there. You know, is this more like going to have AAA kind of games, or is this more like an Apple streaming thing, the Apple Arcade, which is like, ugh, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the board they have here, they don't have an actual list of the games with this, but games they do list are Shadow Tactics, Yooka-Laylee, Impossible Lair, Sonic Mania, Control, Grid, Trails of Cold Steel 3, Indivisible, Blasphemous, Everspace, Tennis World Tour, Bloodstained, Resident Evil Biohazard, Abduction, The Surge 2, Steam World, Dig 2, Brothers, Paper Beast, Two Point Hospital, Abzu, Metro Exodus, Lumines Remastered, Overcooked 2, Rhyme, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Classic games from Ubisoft, Capcom, 505 Games, and Team 17.
Huh. Do they have a price for it?
Early access pricing for Luna Plus will be $5.99 a month.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's cheap. Ooh, I'm in.
And the Ubisoft ones are listed as coming soon, which they don't have a price on.
Huh. Oh, wait. So you got to pay a different price for different
for
developers?
The Ubisoft one, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And the $5.99 is an introductory price. They say they'll give you 30 days notice before they increase the price. Works with their own Luna controller, Xbox One controllers, DualShock 4, or mouse and keyboard. They recommend a 10 megabit per second internet connection to play in 1080p and 35 megabits for 4K.
Oh, wait. If this is Amazon, I could play this on the TV. I don't need a console anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it works with Amazon Fire TV.
Cool.
Also works with Mac, PC, and web browsers too, believe it or not. And you'll want to make sure you don't have a data cap because they say it could use up to 10 gigabytes an hour at 1080p.
Yeah, well, they all do, right?
Yeah.
Well, that pricing makes me nervous. So, like, that's a great price, but when they say something like that, that means it's going to get jacked.
Yeah, it's going to go up eventually with that. And the Ubisoft channel will include new and favorite titles from Ubisoft, which they say is coming soon, and from the looks of it, will be its own thing. So I don't know if that's going to be included in that. But
I mean, I guess that depends on how big of a Far Cry and Assassin's Creed fan are you? I mean, I know they make a lot more other things of that, but those are the big ones, right? Like, they're really,
really big ones. But I mean, like, let's just say that this goes up to $10 a month. What if you just want to go all the way and go up to $24 a month or $25 a month and get that Xbox subscription that we talked about instead?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a better deal if you, because, I mean, the way I see these game streams, it's just if somebody has a laptop or a tablet and, you know, they're not committed to a piece of hardware.
Yeah, well, and there's some overlap when it comes to, like, some of the games. I heard some overlap there between the Game Pass. I don't know. I mean, like I said, I have my own reasons for liking these kinds of things. If I'm paying the $24, though, I'm getting the console included in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah.
And, I mean, at this point, you're almost at half the price for this, and you get access to, you know, AAA titles. You're going to get EA stuff on the Xbox, whereas these ones seem like they're a little bit less than common.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. And, like, at $6 a month, that's cool. But if they jack it up, or if it goes higher than that, then now we have a different calculation to make.
Yeah.
Know?
Oh, and the controller will be also able to interact with Alexa.
Huh?
Yeah. The Luna controller is going to have a button on it you can push, and it will be a way to activate Alexa.
Speaking of that, I wonder how's the Xbox controller going to work.
I don't know. You just connect it with USB. It's like a USB device.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, my Xbox controller isn't even USB. It's got cord.
It's a USB cord, right?
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, Xbox controllers are USB. It also Luna also supports the PlayStation DualShock controller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, then.
Well, that's tech news. I can also report that our October skill of the months will be Herblore and Slayer. I hear the pin drop for Herblore.
Slayer, okay. Yeah. It's so bad. I mean, I wish I won 120 and I had a little more motivation.
Yeah.
Because that's actually one of my favorite skills.
I agree. Well, I mean, that many people had it as their favorite skill. not that it's one of mine. But anyways, moving on to some achievements of the week. We got Ace's Angel with 99 Dungeoneering on September 23rd. Doc Hawk with 99 defense on the 23rd as well. Arendelle with 99 divination. Mike Strike 3 with 99 invention. Schnetz with 99 slayer. Silly Cat 98 with 99 crafting. And then on the 22nd, we have NI Nightmare with 120 invention. And Nordic Falcon on the 20th with 99 woodcutting.
All right. Very nice achievements. Then we have Surge Aurora with 99 ranged on September 20th, and Surge Aurora with 99 constitution on September 20th. We have Devil Chat with 99 Herblore on the 18th, and Chaotic Eric with 120 archaeology on September 17th. We have Dennis with 120 archaeology on 17th. And Rastafa with 200 mil woodcutting on September 17th. Sobe with 99 fishing on the 17th. And Sobe with 99 cooking on the 17th. So they must have cooked all those fish that they caught. Very good, everyone.
Nicely done. Nicely done. 200 mil woodcutting. That's a feat in this day and age.
Oh, man. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way to make woodcutting faster.
Nope.
Or just
nope. You just got to slog through it.
Yep.
All right. I'm taking Pick of the Week this week, and Pick of the Week is an old game, but it recently went 1.0, and that is Factorio. It is the automation simulator out there. And, you know, this is just something you can throw your head into and, you know, before you know it, 3 hours are gone. Have you ever tried this?
I haven't.
Yeah. You know, think of it kind of like a Minecraft kind of thing, except built around machinery and automation. And the whole goal of it is to escape a planet after your spaceship has crashed. And you go through all the stages from, you know, generating steam power and getting electricity going all the way up to nuclear and automating with robots and whatnot. And you also do need to, of course, defend what you're putting up. And it just gets really interesting.
Oh, that actually sounds – that sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, and you know, if you want, you can make it so that it's a safe game so that they don't attack. But that removes the challenge of it. There's also an expensive mode, which makes it so that things are more expensive and things take time to build. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is the kind of game I'd like to have on mobile. It doesn't appear to have a mobile version for it. And unlike most games out there, they actually have a demo as well, believe it or not.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. And
I didn't realize there was like a goal. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, you don't think there's a goal because it takes a while to progress through it. But there is a goal at the end of it. It's, of course, available on Steam, and this is actually a developer that doesn't actually participate in the Steam sales. So you can buy it whenever you want, and it's always going to be the same price.
Huh. Okay.
So that's Factorio, linked in the show notes at update.rspmb.com. And, you know, one of the reviews they have on this is from Notch, Mojang, one of the Minecraft creators, says that I see conveyor belts when I close my eyes and I may have been binging Factorio lately. And this is from the creator of Minecraft. So that says everything you need to know about it. So that's the pick of the week. What have you been up to this week on RS?
Man, I have been yak tracking like crazy. You know, tried to get lunar spells a little bit, messed with the grind and the sift soil, but mostly I've spent all my time yak tracking. And here's the funny thing, like, yak track will bring you back into playing, like, a lot of Runescape.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I play a little bit every day, no matter what's going on.
And it diversifies what you do, right?
Yeah, but it will pull me into, like, where I'm doing, you know, 3-hour sessions again, and I, you know, it's Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of my favorite things about it as well. Is there anything else you want to mention from this week or that about
no,
it?
Well, you've been up to, Shane.
From that. You know, I've done some Yak Track, but I still got that archaeology hit. I'm trying to get to 109 right now, and you know, I spent a couple of sessions doing archaeology when I should have probably been doing Yak Track instead.
Hard call, though.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
It's fun.
And some of the ones you can you can hit, you know, some of the Yak Track archaeology tasks as well, so that's always good. But, you know, we're just going to, of course, before we wrap this up, I'll just point out the money-making methods that you mentioned. You mentioned, of course, the goat horns, for example. And what was the other one? The chocolate dust, right?
Chocolate dust, yeah.
And, you know, I always say that, you know, it's just so weird that I spent about 10 minutes testing before the show, testing the trap spell. And with the Grenwalls in that, I freaking made 500K profit just from doing that for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man.
So, I mean, if you're looking for something to do, let's see, are there Hunter Yak Track tasks? That's something I don't know.
I don't think I've seen one yet. I don't know.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only ones are the Lore Hunter. Gets me thinking, what other skills are not included in this?
I don't know. That's a good exercise. We need to go through there and check.
Is Hunter the only one?
Do people, like, is that the most hate? No, it can't be more hated than agility.
But agility's in the act track.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And Hunter's not. And there's no way that people hate Hunter worse.
Yeah, I think that's the only one that's in there. Because fletching, crafting, smithing, mining, they're all in there. The combat skills are in there. Slayer's in there.
Did they just forget? Like, did it just get overlooked?
Divination is in there. Invention is not in there, but that's understandable. It's an elite skill. Huh.
Yeah, prayers there. Crafting. Construction. There's no construction, right?
Yeah, there is construction.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. They're like, make mahogany boxes and stuff.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I guess it, guess it is, Hunter, then. I wonder if there's a reason for that or if it, or what.
Or is it just an oversight?
Yeah.
That's really weird. Huh. Anyways, I think with that kind of revelation, it's safe to end the show at this point in time. So with that being said, we'll be back next week with our Mod Warden special. If you guys want to subscribe and, you know, subscribe, make sure you don't miss that episode. You can subscribe at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and YouTube. We're on all the big ones. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. Of course, you can also find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And our friends chat is Bits Bytes, where you can hang out with us while we're playing if you want to as well. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See ya.
See ya.